When you think about it, the conservation wardens in our state have a really big job. We have the popularity of hunting and fishing, very popular here in the state, all kinds of other outdoor activities. It's no wonder that they really don't have an off season to relax a little bit. Steve DeWald worked as a conservation warden for more than 30 years, and he's written a book about his experiences. It's called Under a Poacher's Moon: Stories of a Wisconsin Game Warden, and we're happy to have him with us today to talk about it. I finished reading it last night, and really enjoyed it. Some hair-raising things, some funny things, some very sad things. Steve DeWald, welcome. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, Larry. It's good to be here.
As I read through the book, I thought, oh man, there's some real highs in a warden's life, and some real lows in a warden's life, and I sometimes wonder how a person can spend a whole lifetime doing it.
Well, it's a challenging profession, but at the same time, it's rewarding. We get to see, as you say, a lot of funny things, a lot of tragic things, but you just try keeping your focus on moving forward and helping people to enjoy the outdoors, to take care of the natural resources for future generations, and to make sure that the people who are out there stay safe.
Before we get going here, I should give the phone number for people to join in, which I haven't done that yet. And as you listen, maybe you've crossed paths with a conservation warden, a game warden. What's your understanding of their work? Do you have an appreciation you'd like to share? Certainly, I've got several myself. You can call in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can go to my Facebook page, post a photo or a question there at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you about your experiences and certainly to answer your questions. I sometimes think I must hold a record for being stopped and checked by game wardens. I think it's somewhere around 20 times, maybe.
That's kind of interesting because, we would still check people who said, you're the first game warden that's checked me in 50 years of hunting, So it's kind of the law of averages. There's many more people out there that hunt and fish than there are wardens. There's about 12,500 licensees for every warden in the state of Wisconsin, so the odds of being checked really aren't that good.
No, I've been checked goose hunting, deer hunting, pheasant hunting, fishing, boating. I've never had a problem, never had a ticket. I haven't been doing anything wrong. And I must say that one of the things that I'm always impressed with is the manner of the game wardens that I've come in contact with. They've always been professional and friendly and really easy to work with.
Well, people skills are very important in law enforcement. We hire people that are good communicators because, we want people to be agreeable with our goals and our priorities because we're basically trying to do things that maintain the public trust and to preserve, our wildlife and our air and water of Wisconsin, which is very important, and we need public cooperation to do that.
Yeah.
And when you're working by yourself, obviously you have to have good people skills because when we need backup, backup for us might be an hour or two from another agency rather than just minutes, because a lot of the places where we work, we don't have a fire number there. There's no street address. We might be an hour walk away from our truck, and sometimes we're on Lake Michigan or the Mississippi River in a county where there is no patrol boat from the local sheriff's department to rescue us if we need help.
Yeah, it's... I've actually been checked in the Shawamigan National Forest. You're a mile off the road. If a warden would need help in a situation like that, I don't know how they'd ever be able to explain how to get there.
Yeah, that is a challenge, and I've been in some of those circumstances myself, and I've called for backup, and they ask what's your location, and you say, well, there's a road about 3/4 mile east of me, and that's about the best I can do.
Did you expect to do this job for 31 years, and I'm wondering how the profession changed over that time.
Well, when I first became a warden, I was really very excited about it, and I remember thinking, "Boy, I hope that they let me work as long as I want." And the job has changed a lot. When I in the early '80s, we were really concerned about deer poaching because the deer numbers at that time were a lot lower. The harvest was, 75,000 deer a year, where now it's, 370,000 a year. And there's been a lot of things added on. It seems like every year or two, there's new responsibilities added on, from ATV regulations to, they didn't even have turkey hunting when I started in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So between that and personal watercraft, and then we went into the ceded rights issues in the northern third of the state, where the harvest of fish and game off the reservations, and then after 9/11, wardens got a lot more involved in homeland security issues as well. So there's constantly things being added to the list of priorities and responsibilities, but not very many come off the list.
Yeah, I've really found your book fascinating. It's such a broad range of things that happen to you. You've got something like, I'm just trying to remember, 36, probably something like 36, 37 stories in your book, each one a bit different.
Well, I wanted to give the reader a perspective from behind the badge to kind of learn what it's actually like to be a conservation warden in Wisconsin. And I didn't want to write a book where it was just a bunch of stories of how we catch people. I wanted to more focus on the actual emotions and observations of the officer, so that the reader can kind of have a better understanding of what the job is really like.
Yeah, and I think you certainly you get that as you read the book. You certainly get that, and you say in the book, and we'll get to the Alan Kakano, get to you in just a second here, but you say that like a farmer, a game warden is tuned into the changing of the seasons. And you go through that in one of your chapters, and I thought, oh, my goodness, I hadn't even, and as much time as I've spent in the outdoors, I hadn't considered how a warden might look at the seasons. And, man, there's something new every season.
That's what makes the job interesting, though, because when you get tired of working boating enforcement in 95-degree heat, fall comes.
Yeah.
And then you get cooler nights, and you start checking small game hunters, and you start working on deer shining complaints at night, and every 3-4 months the job changes. So in a way it's good, because it reinvigorates you and makes you focus on something new, so you don't burn out doing the same thing month after month.
Yeah. Alan Kakana has a question for you. Hi, Al.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I want to thank the warden for his years of service, and my question was regarding bag limits as far as panfish go. My cabin is in northern Wisconsin. We fish Wisconsin, and we also fish Michigan. And I had a discussion with one of my buddies this weekend. I said, your bag limit for, like, bluegills is 25 fish, and your possession limit is 50. And it's also the same for Michigan. And, I fish both states. What is the ruling if, let's say, I have my possession limit of 50 bluegills for Wisconsin, and I also have my possession limit of 50 bluegills for Michigan, is that legal?
Oh. That's a
Well, I guess,
you got to have blue and gold on the, on the Michigan
differs.
Ones and red and white on the other.
It kind of differs from state to state, because I know in Minnesota's possession limit is 1 day's bag limit, where Wisconsin is 2 days bag limit. So it kind of depends basically on where you are storing the fish. And if you're storing fish in Wisconsin, you can store up to 2 days bag limit. But that's it, because unless you're dealing with something that's tagged in another state where you have a CITES tag or something, and when you bring it across the line, you have to basically follow our regulations while it's kept in our state.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Thanks, Al.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you as we talk today with our guest for today, Steve DeWald, who is retired after 31 years as a game warden here for the Department of Natural Resources in Wisconsin, written a book, Under a Poacher's Moon. Really fun to have him along here, and I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've got an experience to share or a question to ask. I hope you'll do that at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call or shoot us an email. You were in the midst of that spearfishing controversy up north in the 1980s. I covered that on Wisconsin Public Radio. Had some pretty in-depth and pretty heated discussions, even on the air here, although I think we certainly kept it civil. But maybe you could talk about your experiences with that.
Well, naturally, you know, when that ruling first came down, there were a lot of people that were concerned and confused about it. And it was, I guess, what I call a new reality in life. And it was a new reality for wardens as well, because, you know, for 100 years, we'd been going to the north in the spring to make sure nobody speared walleyes. And then after the court ruling came down, we were required to help people spear walleyes. So
yeah,
it was quite a change, you know, for us as well. But the bottom line was that we had to remember that public safety was the most important issue, and we wanted to recognize that people had the right to free speech at the boat landings, and there was a lot of free speech flying around. There were protests at the landings and people carrying signs, but when it started to get to the point where public safety was an issue, we had to focus on that, and we basically did armed patrols on the water to escort the spearing boats while the state patrol and other local law enforcement officers protected and kept the peace at the boat landings. But there were many arrests at the boat landings. Some nights, 44 or 45 arrests at a single boat landing. Out on the water, we would have people shoot over the water from their cabins with high-powered rifles. And, you know, when they're shooting it, we don't know if they're shooting to kill us or shooting to scare us. It was a very scary and difficult time, but we just kept with it. And this went on for several different springs. It wasn't a one-spring deal. It was 4 or 5 years before it settled down. And with the number of satellite trucks at the boat landings from CNN and all kinds of television stations from all over the country, you know, it kind of fed on itself after a while. And once the judge ruled that the allowable catch on each lake had to be shared between the spears and the recreational fishermen, then everybody realized that everybody was still going to have an opportunity to catch the fish, and that calmed things down. And once the satellite trucks left, then most of the people kind of went back to their original way of life.
Your book is titled Under a Poacher's Moon, and somebody asked me, what is a poacher's moon? And I think I know the answer to that, but you give me your answer.
Well, it's kind of funny, because I used to tell my wife, and, you know, it'd be a November night and the moon would be coming up, and I'd say, well, it's a poacher's moon. They're going to be shooting deer tonight. I didn't realize that there's actually another definition of it. I forget which moon it is, but it's one of the, I think it's the October moon that they call a poacher's moon. It's the exact definition, I'm not sure of, but there's another definition for it as well.
Yeah, but it's a nice bright moon.
Yes, very bright, right?
Yeah. Dave in Peshtigo, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I got a question. I've been out in northern Wisconsin, northeastern Marin County, since the 60s. And basically, I'd like to know your opinion on baiting, because yeah, I've shot a lot more deer back the last year when they were up browsing and that. And that seems to be a big controversy nowadays.
Yeah, some people get really upset. Fair chase, for one thing, or attracting deer from a wide area to an area where somebody's baiting illegally or illegally.
Yeah, baiting really created its own storm of controversy. You know, when I first started as a warden, there was no baiting whatsoever. You could not even have out a salt block. You know, at that time, if somebody had a salt block, that was a big baiting case. Well, now we have find situations where people are dropping truckloads of bait on the landscape, and it raises concerns, you know, both from a biological standpoint of, you know, possibly spreading disease at the food site, to competition between neighboring property owners. If one person baits with a lot of bait, they're going to draw deer to their property, and the next person won't have many deer around if he's not baiting too. So it creates this endless cycle. So, you know, some people, you know, I can see their position, that it helps a young person or an elderly person have a chance at a deer that they may not have without a bait pile, but it's an issue that never seems to resolve itself, and the state seems to be pretty evenly split on it.
Yeah. Stephen DeWald, Our guest today, author of Under a Poacher's Moon, visiting with him about his 31 years as a game warden here in Wisconsin. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'd love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Having a great time talking today with Stephen DeWald about his new book, Under a Poacher's Moon, about his 31 years as a game warden here in Wisconsin. Poaching, we talked about that a little bit, but how common is poaching in Wisconsin? And is it deer mostly, or what other species are involved?
Actually, if it's an animal or a bird in Wisconsin, it's subject to poaching. It's amazing, really, what goes on out there. And before I was a warden, I never believed that so many things could happen in a county. I grew up in Sheboygan County and never thought much happened there. But I started working there as a warden later on, and I couldn't believe all the things that were going on. You have to understand that, you know, there's all kinds of markets for wildlife parts, even whether it be live turtles shipped to Asia or the caviar from Shovel Nose Sturgeon on the Mississippi River. We had clamming issues in the 1990s where people were making $1,000 a day diving for clams.
That was amazing to me.
Yeah, and just the value of wildlife deer racks is just amazing. I went to a conference this spring just as a retiree, and the Minnesota DNR put on a presentation there where they showed the world record 8-point buck, which was harvested in Minnesota illegally. And they had the rack there, and they said that an antler buyer from New York State offered the Minnesota DNR $330,000 for that one set of antlers, which just boggles the mind. But I've known for—
Did they take it?
No. No, they still have the rack. But I've known for many years that a very nice Western Wisconsin whitetail rack will sell for $10,000 at a deer show if somebody offers it for sale. So there really is a high demand for wildlife of all kinds. And then you also have the timber theft issue in Wisconsin. We have a lot of valuable timber, and there's a lot of private landowners that are sometimes subjected to timber theft, where a timber buyer buys timber on a neighboring property, and they'll go across the line and take a couple of walnut trees or some veneer oak, and that runs into thousands of dollars very quickly.
Yeah. Too bad. But that's why you're out there in part, I guess, isn't it?
That's right.
Mary in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just wondering if shining fish is legal. I live on a small lake, and a couple times this last month there's been boats out shining fish.
Yeah, there was a law change a few years ago to allow night bow fishing. And bow fishermen are allowed to operate spotlights at night on their boats and to shoot fish with a bow and arrow, but they're restricted to rough fish. They're not supposed to be shooting panfish or walleyes or northern pike, but they are allowed to do that now.
Oh, well, if they're getting pike and panfish, what do you do about it?
You can call the DNR hotline and report the violation, and the closest warden to the area will respond.
Yeah, what's that hotline number?
This 1-800-TIP-WDNR.
What 800 what?
TIP WDNR.
Okay, WDNR. Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call if you'd like to join in. I think back. I was trying to remember some of the funny things that have happened that you've had to experience over time, and there have been some pretty funny ones.
Well, one story I like to tell is during one of the presidential campaigns, Vice President Al Gore was in La Crosse, and I had to help escort him down the Mississippi River in a patrol boat with Secret Service personnel. And we went down to Lansing, Iowa, and pulled up on the dock there at Lansing, and obviously there are a lot of people there to welcome the vice president, and the high school band was there all excited because they were looking forward to play something for the vice president. The unfortunate thing is his staff members did not keep him up to date as to where we were. So when he grabbed the microphone to address the high school band, he says, "Could you play me On Wisconsin?" And staring at this band from Iowa, so obviously they were kind of stunned by that request and stood there looking at each other, not knowing what to do. So I don't think he carried the vote in Iowa.
Oh, that's a great story. There was another one about a trout, an older fellow, trout fishing.
Yeah, that, you know, most of the stories in the book I personally witnessed, but this was one that some members of my team shared with me, where they approached two gentlemen on opening day of trout season, and one Norwegian gentleman was in his late 80s, and he saw the wardens coming, and he kind of turned away and made a furtive movement, and they walked up to check his license, and as they were, the front of his trousers were very active, so to speak. And he asks, what's going on down there? And he sheepishly reaches into his trousers and pulls out this 10-inch trout that he was trying to hide. But they then explain that the size limit was 9 inches there, so he was okay. He didn't have to worry about hiding that trout in his pants.
Oh, man, that was a great story. Nick in River Falls, your turn. Thank you, Nick.
How's it going?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was wondering, as a former game warden, what your guest thought about Dr. Kroll's report about his recommendations for deer management in the state.
Oh, the Deer Czar report. Okay.
Well, I guess generally, and not pertaining just to him, but I'm concerned about the move towards the emphasis of trophy deer, mostly because, you know, when you insert competition into a recreational activity like hunting, it tends to bring out bad things, not good things. You know, mm-hmm. We've always tried to promote more of the camaraderie and the family groups and the experience of who you're out in the woods with rather than how many tines are on the deer. And I guess I'm concerned that he kind of follows a trophy emphasis. And this is happening, you know, this influence of trophies is affecting hunters all around the state. You know, we had a situation where one of our wardens stopped a guy who threw a buck into the back of his pickup truck and covered up right away and took off at a high rate of speed. And the warden stopped him thinking it was an illegal deer. Well, he found the deer was perfectly legal. The young man was trying to hide the deer from his friends because it didn't have an 18-inch spread. And when I see things like that happen, it concerns me because, you know, why can't he enjoy shooting an 8-point buck that doesn't have an 18-inch spread? He should be happy yeah. with that. And, you know, when you're not happy with that, then I think we're steering our sport in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And thanks very much, Nick, for calling. Appreciate your call.
Yes, sir. Thank you for answering.
You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. I remember a friend of mine was Harold Hetrick, and I'm sure you knew Harold.
Oh, yeah, I knew Harold well, yeah.
Steve, Harold talked at our Rod and Gun Club meetings for many years. He used to like to come because he'd always get in a sheep's head game afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But he talked about the fact that there was even a fair amount of homicide that has gone on over the years in Wisconsin during the hunting seasons.
Yeah, that's one of the tricky things about investigating a hunting fatality because, as you say, there have been situations where people have decided that they were going to kill somebody and they wanted to make it look like an accident during the deer gun season. So it really puts wardens in a difficult spot because you respond to the scene and the person's dead on the ground and there's upset family members in the area and you're trying to interview people and be compassionate and show empathy, but at the same time you also have to be objective and sometimes you have to ask some hard questions. And it's a very difficult balancing act.
Yeah, it definitely is that. What do you think is the most effective way, you know, you've been 31 years out in the field, what do you think is the most effective way to protect our environment? Fines, education, anything else?
Well, I think the majority of the people, the most effective technique is education, because if we're all on the same page as far as what's needed to protect our resources, the majority of the people will go along with it. There will always be the minority of the population that don't care about the future, and those are the people where fines and penalties are going to be required.
Yeah.
But I think for most people, if you can explain what's going on and what needs to be done, most people go along with that.
Steve in Lake Geneva has a question for you. Hi, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hi there. My question is, how widespread is the illegal cultivation of marijuana by criminal organizations in Wisconsin? What kind of natural resource impacts are being seen by wardens related to this activity? and how is this affecting public safety? That's a question I'll listen up here.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And, Steve, you do address that in your book.
Yes, we do. This is a growing problem. There's been some very large marijuana grows found in both the National Forest in Wisconsin and on state land. There was one in Buffalo County. There's been some north central Wisconsin, northeastern Wisconsin. It's a very serious concern because the people that are involved with this are Mexican drug gangs from Mexico that bring people up here to man these plots throughout the growing season. They're heavily armed. If somebody that's a bird watcher, a hiker, or a hunter happens to stumble into one of these camps, there's a high likelihood they're going to be shot. And the environmental damage is just awful because they bring in all kinds of herbicide. They run irrigation systems from our streams to irrigate the plots. And when they do their harvest and leave, they leave all the herbicides and fertilizers and garbage and everything out there, and it's just left. So it's a major problem that seems to be increasing in frequency, and it's something that we should all be concerned with.
And they're pretty good at disguising. I mean, you'd think, okay, let's just get up in a plane and fly around and you know, over our national forest, and we should be able to see that. But they've gotten pretty good at hiding.
That's right.
It's a tough issue. Well, we love to hear from you with your questions for our guest today, Steve DeWald. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show, and you can post there. You take your duties to protect all species in your area, but it seems like probably some are a little closer to your heart than others. Which ones are they?
Oh, that's a hard thing to answer. You know, being hired in the early 80s, protecting deer was the big thing at that time. If you weren't out working deer shiners 4 or 5 nights a week, you weren't doing your job. You know, that was pretty much the way it was at that time. But now we have to spend a lot more time on all kinds of other things. So I enjoy watching waterfowl in the fall. You know, I have a special affection for wood ducks just because I've had some really neat experiences watching wood duck migrations into marshes while I was working. But, you know, I just like wildlife in general. I enjoy seeing kids catch their first bluegill, you know. So to me, having nice bluegills is just as important as having a 50-inch muskie.
Oh.
So I really enjoy mostly the kids' reactions more than anything. My daughter's 14 now, and I've seen her become a young outdoor woman, and she's harvested 3 deer with a bow and arrow already and
wow.
Enjoys fishing. So she really... She's what this job's all about. You're trying to protect something for the future generations.
Yeah, I have an 8-year-old daughter who's caught a lot of bluegills. We had a lot of fun doing it. We had an email from Robin Winnebago who says, the axiom is that 10% of the hunters and anglers harvest 90% of the fish and game. Is that true for violators, too? 10% of the people you contact are taking up 90% of your enforcement time.
Yeah, that's probably not too far off. We have some habitual poachers that even after they're revoked, they go right back to poaching. Some will move across the state line to another state to try to avoid the revocation. However, recently Wisconsin became a part of that violator compact, so that doesn't work so well for the poachers anymore. But yeah, that is the case, and we also have the issue of what we call crossover crime, where people that are the local drug dealers or engage in violent behavior with other agencies are also the guys that are causing us the most problem too. And some of the people that are out digging ginseng illegally during the summer are also attending marijuana plots at the same time. So we run into these crossover criminals that are pretty bad people. Many are convicted felons, and they cause problems for other law enforcement agencies as well as ours.
John in La Crosse, turn to you now. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Steve. Steve, I used to work with you back in La Crosse in the early 90s, and I did environmental work with the tanks and the groundwater pollution. Mm-hmm. And a couple stories, one story in it, and then I'd like you to share your perspectives on your work with environmental enforcement and spills response. But I wondered if you'd share the story about our friend from Chipmunk Coulee who had a run-in with your decoy deer. if you recall that story.
Yeah, this was during deer season. We had a landowner expressing concerns about people shooting across the fields in the direction of their horses. So we put a deer decoy up out there, and a man came along and was getting ready to shoot when we basically went down to arrest him. And he got mad and that he was going to get cited for hunting off a roadway, so he came back 15 minutes later with a spray can of blaze orange paint and started running across the field to spray our decoy. So I bail off the hillside and go run across the road after him. And I guess he didn't realize that I was a runner, because I caught him before he got to the decoy, and we ended up arresting him for obstructing a warden besides.
And, of course, the whole thing was on videotape, too.
Yeah, some of it was.
Yeah. Good story, Jet.
But wardens do get involved in the spill response. You know, we've had some issues here where we've had spills on the La Crosse River that we worked on. One of the stories talks about that. And then we also tried to be proactive in Wisconsin. I spent most of the year in Washington, D.C., so that we could come back here and protect the Mississippi River from oil spills. And we're the only state on the Mississippi River that has a law that requires double-hull barges for oil barges on the Mississippi River. So we're trying to be proactive, because once that oil spill on the Mississippi River with the fast current, it's almost impossible to contain.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, John.
Yeah, my pleasure. It was great working with you, Steve. Congratulations on the book and retirement. You are definitely the consummate law enforcement professional. I learned a lot from you.
Thank you, John.
Nancy and Holman. It's your turn. Hi, Nan. Oops. Let's see if we can get her in there. Hi, Nancy.
Hello there. I'm just wondering if he has any concern or comments on the culling of the wolf population from 800 and something down to 350, because they're such a family-oriented. It doesn't, I don't know, I just don't see that it's affecting a lot of people like they claim.
Well, I haven't been paying a lot of attention to it. I don't plan on hunting wolves or trapping wolves, but I know that they are causing some problems, especially for some of the livestock owners. It's kind of similar to the bear population. I've been kind of encouraging the department before I retired to loosen the bear permits for the southern part of the state, because, you know, they may not cohabit our suburbs as well as some of the other animal species. So I guess there's a balancing act there. I think we should have wolves in Wisconsin, but we also have to be have some empathy with the livestock owners that are losing their livestock to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think some people are really upset about the length of the season and the fact that the hunting season extends to times when the female wolves will be, you know, having, mm-hmm. be pregnant and so forth. So I think there's some argument about that for sure.
Right.
A caller in Mineral Point hoped you would clarify that 50 fish bag limit. If you are freezing them to eat through the winter, is that bag limit, does that count? It's still 50 in possession?
Yeah, possession limit is basically what you have possession in your home. So it's,
and that's per person?
Yeah, per person, right. So if you have multiple people with multiple licenses, that's 50 for each person.
Yeah, okay. Terry in Green Bay. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to make a comment and kind of ask a question. I've got property over west of Tomahawk 440s that have been in the family for years, and I've got a couple neighbors that live up there. We have the problem with these so-called big bear hunters that come up with their dogs. They don't own any property. They camp on, you know, like county forest land in the area, and they got these dogs that are running all over. I mean, they're on private land. They're on public land. You know, you can't control the dogs when they get on the scent of a bear. And my neighbor is really frustrated about it, that lives up there. You know, he's got an 80-acre parcel. And he says it's just getting so these guys think they can just run these dogs anywhere. You know, and I know that mm-hmm. you have to have a law enforcement officer, you know, for trespassing. Because isn't it true that a game warden can't really enforce that type of regulation or law?
Yeah, that's right. Wardens do not have trespass authority unless it's snowmobile or ATV trespass.
So it's got to be the county sheriff or something.
That's
like
right.
That. Yeah, something like that. And, you know, what else does a person do in those circumstances? Do you complain? What do you...
I would recommend that he that they try to talk to the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association itself and just explain they're having problems in their township or their county. Because the bear hunters are a pretty tight-knit group, and if they have a couple of problem groups out there, they are concerned about legislation that could potentially negatively affect their sport. So I would contact their association.
All right. There you go. Thank you, Terry. Diane in Iron County, on to you now. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I'm concerned. I live by the turtle flambeau flowage, and I know that we have no warden in this area, that John Wint comes down here all the time from the northern part of the county, but that's our actual warden. They said another warden will come every now and then on the flowage from a different county, and this is just very concerning.
Turtle Flambeau Flowage is a pretty big body of water. And a lovely body of water, too.
Yeah, there are a lot of vacant stations across the state. You know, my position was vacant for over a year before it was filled, and it's, like I said earlier, there's like 12,500 licensees in Wisconsin for every warden, which actually ranks us dead last in the country as far as warden staffing.
Is that right?
That's right. So it's a common concern because there are a lot of holes out there. There's been some vacant stations in our part of the state that have been vacant for several years, and what's bad is that sometimes Department of Administration will say, well, you haven't filled that position for several years, so we don't need it anymore, but it's because they haven't been allowed to fill it. So
yeah,
it's really a catch-22.
Yeah.
I'm also concerned about, you know, these stories of privatizing a lot of, like, deer hunting lands and things like that. What, any ideas on that?
Yeah, I agree with that, and I kind of wrote about that in one of the chapters of my book where, you know, some well-financed people are beginning to buy up large sections of land and fencing them in and making them, you know, permanent deer hunt clubs. And that obviously disrupts the natural movement of deer in the area because they're no longer allowed to pass through or from those type of areas. And I guess we don't want to go to the European style of hunting where it's a hunt for the wealthy and not for everybody.
Thank you for calling, Diane, very much. And Stephen, thank you so much. I really enjoyed reading your book. And how's it doing, by the way?
It's doing very well. It's available on Amazon.com, and the Kindle format is now available, too. And I've been selling about 100 books a month, so it's going pretty good.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it. And hopefully you'll sell a few more after today. Appreciate it, Stephen.
Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being with us today. Stephen DeWald. And the book is titled Under a Poacher's Moon, 36 short stories shared in this book give you an opportunity to experience the challenges that are faced by those men and women who work in conservation law enforcement here in Wisconsin. It's a very interesting book. We've been talking about the wonders of Wisconsin natural areas. A lot of them are our lakes and rivers, and a great way to enjoy those spots in particular is by kayak or canoe. And Darren Bush of Rutabaga Paddle Sport is up next to talk about ways to get young people out on the water and what's new for products and techniques. That's coming up next. Stay tuned here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.